Aristotle once said, "We are what we repeatedly do." Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. And that is exactly what we learned today in today's episode from Dr. Ron Chamberlain. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Ron Chamberlain is the Director of Counseling and Sports Psychology for Intermountain Southwest Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. He previously worked as the sports psychologist for the athletic departments at the University of Washington and Brigham Young University. He received both his doctoral degree in counseling psychology and his master's degree in school psychology from Brigham Young University. Dr. Chamberlain is a certified consultant through the Association for Applied Sports Psychology. He is also listed in the United States Olympic Committee Sports Psychology Registry. He is a member of the American Psychological Association and the Association for Applied Sports Psychology. He is the author of Ready to Play: Mental Training for Student Athletes, which I have read, and it's an incredible book and I highly recommend it. In today's episode, some themes that we go over is why do we get excited when we set goals but have difficulty sustaining the excitement? What are building blocks for success, and what does it mean to be ready to play before an athletic event or any kind of event for that matter? And what is the best way to handle emotions, whether they are positive or negative, during those critical times? So I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and without further ado, here's Dr. Ron Chamberlain. All right, welcome to the podcast, Ron. Thanks for being on.
Oh, you're welcome.
So do you mind telling me a little bit more about yourself and how you got into psychology, sports psychology?
Sure. Yeah, it's quite a long road to get where I'm at. So I grew up in a family that was very into sports. So from as young age as I can remember, my dad was always taking us to football games, basketball games. I grew up in the Denver area. So I'd go to the Nuggets games or the Broncos games or minor league baseball or whatever. So since my dad was passionate about it, I became passionate about it, and have two brothers and a sister, and we were all involved in sports growing up. And so just something that came natural to me, you know.
Yeah.
just a big part of not only our immediate family, but our extended family too, aunts and uncles and so forth. Anyway, so then I went through school and played all the traditional sports. You know, it wasn't as much specialization then as there is now. So I played football in the fall, basketball, even wrestling when I was younger. Grew up in a ski town, so I skied and did some of that, and then played baseball in the summer. And anyway, basketball and baseball were kind of my two favorites. So I eventually, the town I grew up in didn't have a great baseball program, so I wasn't able to pursue that as much, but settled on basketball, went to college, and then ended up majoring in psychology.
Okay.
Went through that program, was very fascinated with psychology as well. So here I have two things I love, sports and psychology. And so now it comes time after I finish my bachelor's degree to decide, well, am I going to go into psychology? Because I have to get a graduate degree there.
Yeah.
Or do I want to maybe go into coaching? So I was really kind of torn between the two, but decided for a variety of reasons to go on into psychology, and got my master's degree in school psychology and PhD in counseling psychology. And then was, at that point, I wanted to go into sports psychology, but I was always told there's not that many jobs, don't specialize too soon, you get into a career that you're not going to find employment. And and so I kind of, you know, just went a different route. But funny thing happened, as soon as I graduated at BYU with my PhD, BYU was hiring a sports psychologist.
Oh, wow.
And so I just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And with a little additional training.
Wow.
I got my certification in sports psychology as well.
So how many years of schooling did this take overall?
Oh, quite a journey. So 10 years total of undergraduate, master's degree, PhD.
Okay.
And then a couple of those years, it sounds a little longer than it is. A couple of those years were actually internship years.
Okay.
So really about 8 years of actual classroom type time.
Yeah.
And then the 2 years of internship experience.
Okay.
But during the internship years, I was doing my master's thesis and doctoral dissertation, which take a lot of time. So it was still kind of pretty much school as well.
So. Yeah. So after school, you went to BYU. How long were you there for?
Working at BYU? Yeah. So I worked at for the athletic department at BYU for 15 years. And loved every minute of it. It was a great setting. Worked right there in the athletic department with student-athletes every day. And loved the student-athletes, loved the coaches I worked with. Learned it as much from them as they ever did from me. So it was a great place to start a career. And then after that, I was, for a variety of reasons, ready for a little bit of a change and ended up getting an opportunity to go to the University of Washington in Seattle, and was there for 4 years, just under 4 years. And what a great experience, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
To be in Seattle, to be in a Power Five conference school working with student athletes and coaches and athletes performing at the highest level. So that was a real thrill, and I would still be there today if we had kind of some family circumstances that led to a reason for us to change and move down here. So, but I still love what I do. So now I work for Intermountain Healthcare and see student athletes through that employment.
Okay.
But I'm also contracted out to Dixie State University.
Okay.
To work with the student athletes here. So.
Okay, so how often do you go back and forth? Like, is it every week or?
No, daily. So I usually do 6 hours a day here and 2 hours a day over at the clinic office.
Okay.
Just behind the hospital. So every day I'm in both settings.
Yeah, so walk me through like what you do every single day with these student athletes. Like, what's a day like?
Well, that's a hard one to do because it's not really the same every day, you know?
Okay.
I would say if you looked more at a week rather than a day, you get a better idea. So I would say most days I'm meeting with student athletes in one-on-one counseling, helping them with performance-related issues or personal problems or mental health issues. So I'd say I spend probably about 6 hours a day doing that. And then usually have a meeting with a team or someone that I meet with and kind of teach them some mental skills for performance. And then also work with, just the normal day-to-day meetings that you have and record keeping and things like that. When I was at BYU and Washington, I also traveled some with teams and would be on the road with them and meeting with student athletes and teams while on the road with them. So that was fun too.
Yeah, that's a lot of traveling then if you're going to...
Yeah, I didn't do games. A ton of it, but enough. But yeah, then that's the other part of the job that you're talking about that I think you hit on, and that's... To be good at what you do, you got to be around and visible and see the athletes and see them in their performance world. So I try to get out to as many of the games as I can. So since I work here at Dixie State, I try to get out to whatever sports are in season. So that means most Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, you're at some kind of a athletic event of some kind.
Yeah.
Which I love. You know, and it's been good for our family because, when I had younger kids, I'd take them to the games and they enjoyed being there. And I'm not really working as far as I'm more just being a spectator and a fan at that point. But in a way, I'm still there.
Because you're observing the people you're working with.
Absolutely. I'm observing the people I'm working with, kind of making some mental notes on what I can bring up in our next session. But also, just being supportive of them and...
Okay.
What they're doing. Cool. So
that's
been fun.
I have a question.
Sure.
I'm sure a lot of people struggle with this. Like a lot of us will set goals and we get super excited about them. And we're like, oh, I'm going to achieve them. I'm going to get this done. But then over time, that excitement goes away. How do we overcome that? And why does that happen?
Well, I think our minds are made to... improve us, to get better. We want to get better. We want to develop and grow. And I think that's just part of our divine nature, And so I think we have that in us. So when we get inspired by something, we see someone else do or we start to create in our own mind things we want to do. I think we get, that's what I called having a dream,
Mm-hmm.
So we dream, we think of possibilities, and when we think of possibilities, it excites us, it kind of lights that fire within. And So I think for initially it's there, and then as we start to pursue it, I think the mistake a lot of people make is you don't achieve big things quickly, you know. Big dreams take time, and it's a process. And so I think that's where the goal setting becomes so important, is to break it down into short-term, intermediate, and longer-range goals so that we can see our progress toward our goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all we do is dream, and we don't have the rungs on the ladder to climb
mm-hmm.
to the top and achieve our dreams. Then we lose the energy, the excitement, the focus. Things get hard. We don't see progress. We just give up and go to something else, you know. And I see a lot of people doing that. So I think, you know, I really encourage the importance of having a big dream and then building those rungs on the ladder. What are your short-term goals? What are your intermediate goals? What are your long-term goals? And then along the way, you still got to keep tapping back into that dream and remembering what it is you're trying to accomplish in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think that helps us stay more passionate about it.
Yeah, cool. And so for our listeners, Ron actually has a book called Ready to Play, Mental Training for Student Athletes. And if you'd like to get it, where can they order it? Amazon, or where do you have it?
Yeah, Amazon has...
Anywhere?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in that book, you talk about your building blocks of success. Do you mind going over some of those and what sure. some of those are?
Sure. Yeah. When you say my building blocks for success, I write about them, but I certainly don't feel like they're mine.
Yeah.
You know, everything I've written in my book, I feel like I learned somewhere along the way. And whether it was coaches of my own or other writers or professors when I was in graduate school or whatever. So I certainly want to give credit where it's due. It's, you know, a combination of a lot of people's influence in my life. But anyway, back to the building blocks. I really kind of think of two foundational building blocks that successful people have. They have big dreams, and then they believe in themselves and their ability to accomplish those dreams. One of my favorite quotes is, incredible things happen when we open our minds to possibilities. And I think that's what the big dreams and our belief that we can accomplish those dreams does. It opens the door to possibilities. And so I think that's what gives us motivation and energy to go forward in life and achieve great things. Another building block then after that is kind of what we just talked about. Of you've got to take your dreams and build a plan of attack is what I call it. You can also think of it somewhat as goal setting, but it's a little different. And that's, okay, so what are you going to do to make the dream a reality? What are the steps? What are the goals? And how are you going to achieve those mm-hmm. those goals? So I think there's some mental work that goes on there. And then it starts to become more not just our mental thing, but a physical thing. My next building block for success that I talk about is commitment. And highly successful people are very committed to what it is they do, whether it's their sport or their business or their academics or their family life or whatever. They get very committed to it. And by commitment, I think of three things. One, hard work. There's no substitute. If you want to achieve greatness, you got to work hard. And not just one day, but consistently over time.
Mm-hmm.
Second is the sacrifice. You know, we make sacrifices. We got to give up some things to achieve other things. Can't do it all. There's just not enough time in the day. If you want to do something really well, you've got to commit to it and deliberately practice to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is resiliency. When things get hard, you got to be able to hang in there and fight through those hard times and weather the storms that come your way on your journey toward your big dreams. So that's kind of what I call commitment, is those three things: work ethic, sacrifice, and resiliency. And then the kind of the capstone of the building blocks for success to me is having a disciplined lifestyle. You got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of your relationships. You got to take care of your spirituality. Just living a good, disciplined life
mm-hmm.
that aligns with what it is you want to accomplish with your dreams. Yeah. And so to me, they kind of all make sense and they kind of all fit together. And but that's kind of how I like to present it, in kind of a simplified mm-hmm. conceptualization of those principles.
Yeah. So you mentioned resiliency. Like, a lot of times athletes, they may make a mistake, say they miss a free throw in a tough spot, like close in the game, or maybe a infielder misses a ground ball, what are some mental strategies to cope with that, like mid-game?
Mid-game.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the big keys to being a successful athlete is you've got to be able to kind of roll with things as they happen, you know? You got to be adaptable. That's the word I would use.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for a long time in sports psychology, we talked about getting yourself ready to play. And that's the focus, a lot of the focus of the book that I wrote, and getting yourself ready for performance. But there wasn't as much early in the early years of sports psychology, there wasn't as much focus on, okay, so get yourself ready, but what are you going to do when things aren't going your way? And so that's what we call coping, or one of my favorite sports psychology people that had a positive influence on me was Ken Revizza. And he talked about, we got to compensate and adjust. And that's what good athletes do, is when things aren't going their way, they don't get down, they don't get negative, they don't stay stuck in the past, they don't worry so much about the future. You still got to stay focused in the here and now, in the present moment,
mm-hmm.
and really dial into the next play, the next point, the next possession, whatever your sport is. I think that's what the really good athletes do.
Yeah.
Is they don't get overly emotional and reactive during the performance. And then they always stay focused on, okay, what's next? What can I do right here, right now?
Yeah, right in the moment.
To make things better. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you're able to do that and do that well, then you're coping well, and you're going to make the best of sometimes not so good performances. Because not everyone performs great all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. What is the best way to make and keep a habit?
Repetition. I mean, that's what really what habits are all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is being intentional about what you want. This goes back to the big dream again. Be intentional about what you want, and then repeat the things you need to do to make that a possibility. You know? So... Mm-hmm. For me personally in my life, I'll give you an example. I feel better and I function better when I exercise regularly. And for me to be able to do that, I kind of have to do it first thing in the morning, because the rest of the day is busy and unpredictable, and I never know if I'll get a workout in or something.
Yeah.
So for me, through the years, I've exercised early morning, you know. Well, first thing in the morning, I get up and go exercise most days, not every day, but most days. And so it's a habit. And there's a lot of days that, if I were honest with myself, do I want to go exercise? No, I'd rather sleep another hour or whatever. But just through the years, it's become such a habit that I don't even really think about it. I just get up, and before I know it, I'm exercising, and then afterwards I feel good, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we're going with this, you know? So it's the repetition of knowing what you want, being intentional about it.
Yeah.
And just start to do those things enough, and you do it long enough. You know, mm-hmm. some people say it takes 21 days to make a habit. I don't know exactly what the timeline is, and my guess is it probably varies from person to person. But I think there's some truth to that, you know, mm-hmm. that it's you know, if you do what you want to do, eat healthier, exercise, read more, whatever it is, you build it into your schedule, and you don't just wait for it to happen. You make it happen,
mm-hmm.
and you do it consistently over enough time, and then I think it becomes more natural.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you mentioned how critical it is to be ready to play before you compete. Do you mind going into more depth what it means to be ready to play and how we get ready to play?
Sure. Yeah, so when I wrote my book, Ready to Play, Mental Training for Student Athletes, at the time, I was teaching a sports psychology class at BYU that a lot of the freshman athletes took, and I was using a variety of different sports psychology books that I liked, but none of them really kind of captured what I wanted to teach fully. But one thing I did notice in doing all that is it seemed like every book kept coming up with the same things, you know, that really sports psychology in a lot of ways is about helping athletes to get properly activated, that's the word we use, or energized,
mm-hmm.
Getting into a good, positive emotional state, and then being focused on the task at hand. So activation, emotion, and focus are kind of the three core elements of being ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it comes down to, okay, what do you do to get yourself ready to play? You know, so that you do have positive energy, positive emotion, and you're able to get your mind focused on the task at hand when it's time to perform. And I think that athletes that understand that and then come up with the mental skills and the performance routines that they need to, can then start to take control over it. So instead of it just being haphazard of, I hope I play well tonight, you can actually influence it to a large degree by knowing it, what it is you like to feel like, and how do you get yourself there. And then it kind of goes back to the habits that you talked about.
Yeah.
You
know?
We can talk about daily habits, but those are what I call performance habits or performance routines.
Yeah.
And good athletes have them. And they do them regularly. LeBron James, I think, is a great example. In the playoffs, I remember seeing the thing on the TV. They were showing what his daily schedule's like during the playoffs. What he does, you know, from morning until game time.
Yeah.
And he's very deliberate, very intentional about everything he does. And a lot of it's focused on taking care of his body, his eating, his rest, his treatments with the trainer.
Wow.
It's not just haphazard. He doesn't just wake up and say, oh, it's game night.
Yeah, you know, every day it's the same exact thing.
I don't want to make it where it's an obsessive, compulsive type thing. But yeah, it's borderline.
Now. Yeah,
you
okay.
know, it's very intentional is the word I would use rather than obsessed. You're just very intentional about what you do so that you're keeping your body and your mind where it needs to be so that you give yourself the chance to perform at the highest level consistently.
Yeah. So what is your ideal performance routine and how can athletes find theirs?
Well, I think it's a very personalized thing, you know. Obviously, there's going to be overlap. You look at great athletes in the same sport and they're going to do similar things.
Yeah.
I think, you know, usually it's a combination of what are you doing to take care of your body? Because as athletes, your body is your vehicle to function well. So you got to take care of it. You know, are you eating? When do you eat? What do you eat? When do you hydrate? What do you hydrate with? You know, what do you, sleep is one of the biggest ones. When do you sleep? There's an interesting article out recently on Roger Federer, who's playing in Wimbledon right now. 12 hours a night.
Wow.
You know, 12 hours of sleep a night.
It's a lot.
And LeBron James in that interview I was telling you about, he's very deliberate about his sleep patterns too and how much he sleeps and so you know the best athletes are very very methodical and intentional about those types of things and making sure your body's in good shape by meeting with your trainer, your physical therapist, taking care of your injuries or whatever. So that you're ready to go. So that there's the physical part. And then the mental part to me is more about making sure you're positive in your thinking patterns. So positive self-talk, using visualization or imagery to mentally rehearse what it is you want to do in the performance tonight. So that those become parts of the deal as well. And then
are you saying doing visualizing the night before or like right before the game or both?
Again, it varies from person to person and how they want to do it. But certainly, I think the night before is a very common time to do it that I see a lot of athletes do. But even in-game imagery, take a sport like baseball and you watch players, you know, when they're in the on-deck circle, when they're before they step in the batter's box, you know, taking their deep breath and closing their eyes and getting a picture of where they want to hit the ball, you know. So it's not just pregame stuff. Some sports lend themselves very well to in-game routines as well. Same thing with free throw shooters. Same things with a volleyball player before the serve. Golfers, you know, I think are... You know, Jason Day, for instance, he's very intentional about doing his imagery before each shot. You'll see him close his eyes and do the whole thing. He's mentally rehearsing all the time. And some people would make it more obvious like him. Others do it, but maybe not quite so obvious to the public eye. But so, yeah, those are the types of things, you know, being positive, being, you know, visualizing and imagining what it is you're doing.
Yeah.
And then skills like relaxation skills. You know, if you watch pitchers, you know, before they pitch, you know, they take They before they step on, or when they step on, they take their deep breath at some point, and they pitch the ball. So being able to, that's all managing activation, you know?
Yeah.
So, because I think athletes perform their best when their bodies are relaxed, their minds are calm and clear and focused, you know? And so what are you doing to create that? So,
yeah.
So again, back to the ready to play, you're managing your energy levels, your emotion, and your focus constantly through self-talk, through imagery, through relaxation strategies, things like that.
Yeah. And you mentioned in your book the theory known as zone of optimal functioning and how we can become too activated and not activated enough. Do you mind going over that a little
bit? Sure, sure. I mean, I like to keep it simple. So I like to think of it as kind of the Goldilocks principle, you know. The porridge she first tasted was too hot, and then she tasted the mother bear's porridge and it was too cold, and then she tasted the baby bear's porridge and it was just right. Mm-hmm. Kind of that same concept. You know, that we can get too energized, you know, for the big game, the rivalry game, the state championship, the whatever. We can get ourselves so pumped up and activated that we're not at our best. And I think you'll sometimes see that in championship-type games. Teams will often go to basketball, for instance. I think the final four games are usually much more enjoyable to watch than the final game, because I think they manage their activation levels better, you know, because you can get too pumped up sometimes, and that so now you're tight, you're overthinking, yeah. You're over trying, you feel like you have to be spectacular. That's overactivation. On the flip side, you have underactivation, and that's where, you know, maybe it's practice time, or it's you're playing a team that you're clearly better than, and it's not a challenge to you, so it's boring, and so you're not as engaged. And those games, you usually don't perform your best either. So it's kind of finding that moderate level of activation where your heart rate's going, your breathing's up, you're excited, you're focused, you're into it, but not too much, yeah. You know? And so I think that's the challenge. Great athletes are always trying to find that moderate level of activation where they're just right. And I think where it gets really challenging is the professional sports like basketball, where they play 82 games a year, or mm-hmm. baseball, 162 games a year. That, every night, think about that, having to get in the right place night after night. Not an easy thing to do, but the best of the best do it well, and that's why they're so consistently mm-hmm. good.
What are the mental tools that those athletes use to make sure they're always in the Goldilocks zone when it comes to competition?
Well, again, I think they're very intentional about just everything they're doing, again, all the way back to their physical habits of eating, sleeping, all that. But I think within the sports venue itself, I think it's really about finding the challenge. I think that's where the sports, where they play so many games, they have to have something specific to kind of challenge them. And competitive athletes do that, so. So they want to challenge themselves. They want to be great at what they do. So, again, I think the positive self-talk, the imagery, the mindful breathing, are all tools that can be used day in, day out. The reality is, for the people that do it the best, it's just habit for them. They don't mm-hmm. even really think about it.
Yeah,
they're just going.
Exactly.
They've just learned how to get themselves dialed in the zone, whatever words you want to use.
Yeah.
And the routines have helped them to get there, and then they just keep carrying out the routine.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. So you'll hear professional golfers occasionally, you know, especially younger players that have their first or big win on the PGA Tour. They'll talk about how nervous they were coming down the stretch of that tournament, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, you know, it's not like they're superhuman and they don't feel things. Of course they're nervous, you know.
Yeah.
But they've learned to manage that by just going back to their pre-shot routine. So what they do the same thing, you know, when it's late in the round and they're holding on, you know, they're a stroke or two ahead or catching the person in front of them. What do they have control over? Just doing their pre-shot routine, just that they do every other shot, and just really dial in and focus on that and trust that the routine itself is going to allow them to execute the shot that's in front of them. And I think great athletes, they have those routines, and they dial in and tune into them, and that's what allows them to have the great performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of the times, even me, like during a game, playing baseball, sometimes I lose focus because I'm thinking about other things, especially in the summer, because summer ball, it's hot and everything.
Yeah.
But what are ways for athletes to dial in and stay focused during the game?
Well, let me define focus for you first. When I think of focus, I think of three things. And the third one is kind of a summary of the first two. But the first thing is, when people are focused, their mind is in the here and the now. Our minds are incredible. We can think about what we did yesterday, what we're going to do tonight, what we're going to do next week.
Yeah.
But when athletes are really dialed in and focused, they're dialed in on right here, right now, this pitch, this, since you use baseball as an example, okay? And so that here and now focus. Second is being tuned into the right cues, the task-relevant cues is what I call them. And so, you know, in baseball, what are the task-relevant cues? When you're at the plate hitting.
When I'm hitting?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
What do you dial in and focus on as a hitter?
Yeah.
Okay, the pitcher, mm-hmm. right? The release point of the pitch.
Yep, exactly. You know?
And, but ultimately, let's even simplify it more than that. It's really about, and some of the best hitters in baseball history talk about it. It's really about see the ball, hit the ball.
Yeah, keep it simple.
You know, keep it simple, but see it well. And so the more you dial in on that, those are the task-relevant cues. And so, because think of a baseball stadium. There's all kinds of things you could be focused on. You could be focused on the score. You could be focused on your playing time. What's the coach thinking? What's the girl in the stands thinking about you?
Yeah.
There's so many things you can be thinking of. But really, if you're going to be a good hitter, when it's time to hit the ball, you step into the box. You want to be dialed in on the pitcher, seeing the ball, and just executing your swing, you know, to hit the ball where you want to, how you want to. So anyway, it's being in the here and now, focused on the task-relevant cues. And the third one is just, I call it just being mindfully engaged in what you're doing right here, right now. And so I think that's really what focus is all about. And just like everything else we've talked about, it can become a habit, you know, if you really work at it. You know, you've got your routine. What do you do when you're in the hole? What do you do when you're on deck? Then what do you do before you step into the batter's box? If you're intentionally doing the right things leading up to the time you step in the box, now by the time you step in the box, hopefully your mind is clear, your body's relaxed, and you're dialed in and focused on the mm-hmm. pitcher and the ball.
Yeah.
And really that's what you practice, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So you can't be sloppy in your practice habits and be joking around and unfocused, and then all of a sudden at game time expect to be dialed in and focused. Mm-hmm. That's why coaches really emphasize
practice like you play.
Yeah. Actually, exactly. Practice like you play, so when it's time to play, you'll just play like you practice, and it's, you know, you don't have to do anything different.
Yeah, exactly. How does self-talk affect an athlete's ability to perform positively and negatively?
Okay. It's a really good question. You know, a lot of how we feel emotionally is influenced by our self-talk. You know, and our self-talk, you know, if we're positive with ourselves, then we can enjoy sport more. We can feel more confident and all of that. When our self-talk becomes negative, then we're the ones that create the tension, the tightness, the anxiety, the fear of failure, things like that. That doesn't just come to you. It's created by us. So, you know, games themselves don't influence how we feel as much as what we tell ourselves about the game or the situation in the game that we're dealing with. And so ultimately, our self-talk determines a ton, because how we feel emotionally is going to impact our activation levels and our focus. So those big three of activation, emotion, and focus are all three going to be heavily influenced by our self-talk.
Yeah.
So being positive with ourselves, I like to think of it this way. If you were coaching a young player, an 8-year-old, how to play baseball, How would you talk to them?
Positively. You'd tell them that they can do it. You're the best.
Exactly. Yeah, you can do this. You got this. Yeah. I believe in you. Or if they're learning, you would give them instruction. You know, if they made a mistake, you know, you would give them some feedback on how they could improve. So the main things that I see when I see good coaches is they're positive, they're instructional, they're supportive. That's the same self-talk we need for ourselves as athletes. You know, why would we be any different? But unfortunately, I see this a lot, especially with college athletes. I don't think the professionals do it as much, or they wouldn't be at the professional level, but especially with college athletes, they're so hard on themselves. You know, they get so, they beat themselves. You're so stupid. Why can't you, you know, you messed up, you know, they get down on themselves, get critical. That doesn't help anyone, really, you know. So keeping your self-talk positive, but ultimately at game time, even positive self-talk can get in the way because you've got to simplify it. You know, I've already said this a few times, but athletes perform their best when their minds are calm and clear. And so there's not a lot of mental chatter at performance time. It's very simple words that you use. And then before performance and after performance, that's when you want to use positive self-talk to get yourself ready for the upcoming game or to kind of transition from your last performance to the next after games, you know.
So to kind of close, sure. These are my two final questions.
Okay.
If we could hop on a time machine right now and you could go back to any time in your life, where would you go and what would you tell yourself?
It's an interesting question. I think it's a great question. For me personally, one of the reasons I'm in this field is because I feel like I could have been a better college basketball player than I was had I known what I know now. So I would love to go back to my college days of basketball and apply a lot of what I've been talking with you about today, because I would have been so much better as a basketball player. I was way too much in my head. I overthought things. So too much thinking, too much trying to please my coach and others and worrying about things that really weren't that important. And so I felt like I was a solid college player, but I could have been a lot better if I had just managed my emotions better, my activation better, been more focused on the right things. And so that's what I would do. I'd love to go back and kind of relive my college basketball days.
Yeah.
Because I felt like when I was a younger athlete and in high school, as a high school basketball player, I felt like I just played the game. It was fun. It was, and I did a lot better, you know.
Yeah.
But as I got older, I got in my head. I thought too much and tried too hard and was unfocused. And so, yeah, that's what I would love to do. And that's why I love the profession I'm in now, because now I get to help others while they're at that stage of life. Because my favorite group to work with is college athletes. And I love to help college athletes figure out what I didn't figure out until later while they're still playing. And see the results, because it's amazing what can happen when they can apply a lot of what we've been talking about.
Yeah. So are these athletes able to apply a lot of these lessons, I'm sure, into their professional life, right? Outside of college, all the sports psychology things that you teach them, right?
That's a great question. To me, sports psychology and everything we teach in sports psychology applies to life. These are life skills. This isn't just helping athletes perform better. They can be used by any performer in any setting, you know, and we're all performers, you know, whether it's in business or in music or sport or parenting or in our whatever we do in life. These are all life skills, and we're all trying to perform our best on a day-to-day basis and achieve our goals and dreams and live happy lives. And so, yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, because to me this is so much bigger than just sports. You know, and I hear that from athletes I've worked with that benefited from what we did together. Years later, they'll come back and say, man, the stuff we talked about back when I was a college athlete, I'm still using today, you know.
Yeah.
A big one is, you know, positive programming, you know, teaching athletes how to think positive and come up with their positive programming list and look at it daily And athletes to this day will keep coming up saying, yeah, I still do that today. It's so helpful, you know.
What's that positive programming list you mentioned?
So it goes back to the self-talk of helping people be more proactive about shaping their self-talk. So I like athletes to come up with a list of 20 to 25 statements that describe them when they're at their best. So as a baseball player, maybe it's, I'm confident. Mm-hmm. I bring out the best in my teammates. I'm fast. I'm athletic. I'm that kind of stuff, you know. So you come up with your list, and you notice they're all positive statements. They're brief, and they're all positives in a positive present tense, like I am.
All those. So kind of like affirmations.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Exactly. That's another way of saying it. It's affirmations. I like to use positive programming because I just think it goes with our computer world. You know, you put garbage into a computer, you get garbage out. So I think of positive programming as just making sure you're putting in positive things about yourself. And then you look at it regularly, you read it out loud, you put it on your phone, you listen to your own voice on the headphones, on your audio. And just doing that regularly, it just reminds you of who it is you're becoming as a athlete or as a person.
Yeah.
And so I think it's one of the more powerful tools that can be used and practiced daily.
Sure. Last question. You can prescribe anything to the entire world and they have to do it for 30 days. What would you prescribe to them and what would you tell them to do?
That's where I'd go back to the building blocks for success and go back to the dream big. I think a lot of it's sad in our world. I think where we could be so much further ahead if people would be taught to dream big and pursue their dreams and do it in a united way. You know, one of the things I get concerned about in our world today is there's so much tension and fighting amongst ourselves, you know. Take our government, for instance. Think of all the good that could be done if we could come up with these big dreams as a government and then be united in our pursuing of those dreams to make life better for everybody, you know, instead of spending so much time fighting about it. So to me, that's what I would look at is what can you do? And this is where I would look at each person and say, or have each person look at themselves in the mirror and say, who am I? What do I want? And then go after it. You know, and then unite with people who can help them get there and help others get there too, you know. Because ultimately, that's what I love about sports is think of the U.S. women's soccer team. You know, they just win the Women's World Cup. And what a phenomenal thing, you know, to you watch the team and they're just, again, who knows what they're really like off the field. But when they're on the field, you can sense that they're united. Mm-hmm. They're in it together. They work so well together as a team. Yeah. And then to see them celebrate their success when you know what it takes to get to the level of success that they've achieved, you know, it's a long journey to get to the point where they were celebrating in Paris. But but they did it, and they did it together. I love that part of sports, you know, that great things can be achieved when people dream big together and unite and then pursue it daily, you know.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please go ahead and leave me a 5-star review and let me know how I can improve this thing. And also share it with your friends on Instagram. Tag me in it at 11kado, KADO. And I'll see you guys next week.